better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by Bud Light Lemon Tea, a unique twist on America's favorite light lager.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back, a College World Series title. Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
First week of August is when it starts.
About 10 days away.
Okay, I'll trust you, Tommy. I'll let you go out there.
They're reporting on the 1st.
Okay.
Which day are they? I know they're reporting the 1st.
Practice starts the 2nd.
The 2nd. So, just do the math. Yeah. So,
okay.
8, 9, 10, 10 days. So,
okay, I'll try. That sounds good to me. Roughly, go along with it.
Approximately 10 days.
I'm telling you. Perfect right there. That's why you have Johnny on the spot over there. But, yeah, so 10 days, roughly, until they report.
Approximately.
Until they
come
into fall camp and get that started. And, I've been asked this, and I don't know if you have been too, Tommy, with fall camp coming up.
Why do they call it fall camp?
No.
No, okay.
I think you're the only one that, has actually brought that up. The least I've heard.
That's Ruskin's bit, but we used to talk about that a lot. And it's 115 degrees. Why are we calling it fall camp?
What would you rather call it?
Preseason camp, summer camp, hot as hell camp, sweat your butt off camp. Fall is nice. Fall is cool. It's comfortable. The leaves are changing. There's nothing cool, comfortable, and awesome about August and standing out on turf that's 115 degrees. Sorry.
Didn't they used to call it like 2-a-days? Back when it was actually 2-a-days.
Fall camp used to be the, I guess it's been the vernacular for decades.
Really?
But there's just nothing fall about it.
No. Well, I do agree with that. It's because if there has been some open practices, you go out there, you get to see exactly, you're standing there, you start dripping in sweat.
So what was your question?
My question was,
I hijacked you.
Was that the question that I get asked from people is, will any of the practices and during fall camp be open at all?
Open to the public or open to the media?
Either. Because I feel like if they're open to the public, people in the media are going to go. And they're going to go and they're going to try to check it out and also see and report on it and we'll talk about it and whatnot. But as far as that goes, I don't know. And I was trying to remember last year, Tommy, did they have any scrimmages open on Saturdays during fall camp? I know in spring they have, but I didn't remember fall if they had.
Tex Clay, he's got a better memory on that. I think the last two were, if I remember correctly. Because there was one that we couldn't go to because we were doing the Thick Burger giveaway.
Right.
And I think the one before that we did get to go to.
Okay.
I think there was two.
Two. So at least there were some that you were able to check out and see and all that.
And I don't remember if they were open to the public or just open to the media, but I think we were I think it was available for us to look at twice.
Okay. And I hope they do that again this year because I was seeing some things because everybody's different, let's just be honest. But I saw that, for instance, Missouri, they had all but three of their fall camp practices open to the public. And I saw that.
Which is very uncommon in today's times.
It is. And I don't think that that's something that a bunch of, Alabama's not doing that.
No.
Alabama's not doing that. Clemson's not doing that. The championship teams are not doing that. But when I saw that, I was a little jealous because I'm like, man, imagine. And I'm not even asking for all but three practices to be open in fall camp because I feel like that's a little over the top. But I just couldn't imagine being able to each week come on this show and give you a report or to be able to discuss what we saw and practices to rev people up for the upcoming season. Because I feel like, and I know we've talked about this, Tommy, I feel like people get excited when expectations start coming around, when they start feeling like this season's going to be really special and it's going to be really fun and there's going to be some great games that they're going to be able to see. Those are things that people get excited about. But I also believe that people do get excited about the upcoming football season more so when you actually have things that you have seen, whether it's me and you or any of the guys we have on as guests or even the fans, when you have things that you can see and say, wow, this particular guy looks really exciting. This particular part of the offense looks like it's really shored up.
Right.
The offensive line is really improving. when you start to be able to actually have those takeaways, I feel like that's what gets people more excited, more so than anything, especially in a year where you're coming off a 2-10 season, so you got to find ways and reasons to be excited about it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Arkansas is still in the business of trying to sell tickets, too. I think one thing you've got to consider is there's a lot of things to consider if you're Chad Morris. First of all, opening it to the public, how big a distraction is that for a team that's got, what do we say, 80 freshmen and sophomores on it out of the 120 with everybody, the 85 scholarships, walk-ons, preferred walk-ons, everybody. You got 80 of those players that are freshmen or sophomores.
Very young team.
How big a distraction is it to just have, perhaps on a Saturday, I think if you opened it to the public on a run-of-the-mill Tuesday or Wednesday, you're going to have tens of people there.
Yeah, not many.
Well, it won't even be hundreds. You know, particularly if you're practicing before school begins, a lot of these times practices will be at 10 or 11 or sometime in the morning or later in the evening because they're trying to avoid the hottest part of the day a lot of times. You're not going to have hundreds of people, I don't believe, until the Saturday scrimmages, because people got jobs. And they know that there are radio shows like this one, Halftime, Rusk and Zach, you know, websites, all sorts of ways to get a report on what's happening. So I'm not sure that the general public would show up, but the ones that did, how big a distraction is it for a young team? And really the things, I mean, the things you want to see at practice is who's there, who's healthy, maybe what positions they're at, is there any mixes there, try to put a depth chart together. I'm not at if I go to practice, it's not necessary to watch a drill and try to evaluate talent.
No.
You know why? Because I can't. Not at a level that a coach can. Not at a level that I feel comfortable coming on and giving some kind of great, insightful analysis that may or may not be right on technique or, hey, I saw Austin Capps at guard and his hand and footwork were
I'm really going to
start breaking that down.
No.
You know? So, but you know what I would like to have an opinion on, because I saw it, is the Saturday scrimmages.
Mm-hmm.
That's generally where they'll have them. So that would be the 10th, 17th, and would they have one on the 24th, a week out? Maybe, you know. I think the 10th and the 17th is going to be the big one. That's where that's where the big one for the players are going to be as far as earning a job, I believe.
Yeah. Well, and you know, you mentioned those drills, and like you could do things too, like, for this year particularly, you have a quarterback battle and you're going to have two guys that are trying to battle it out. And wouldn't it be great if that, because you'd see them both run. All right. Who's completing the most passes? Who's hitting the wide open man? Who's running the offense a little more effectively? Not to say that our decision and who we thought was better would be the ultimate starting quarterback, but it would be something that we could at least break down and discuss and be like, oh man, this practice, Nick Starkle, he looked like the better quarterback today. So is Ben Hicks going to have to watch out? Does that mean he's, you know, he may have thrown down a couple notches instead of being able to be the starting guy game one? I mean, there's just a lot of interest and intrigue about this particular team because it's so unknown. We don't know a lot of these things. Yeah. We don't know a lot of these players because they're brand new. And a lot of us, and depending on how many practices and scrimmages, if any, that are open to the public or open to the media, we're not going to know anything about these guys until they actually start playing games.
Right.
Which at that point in time, it's really going to be like, all right, how can you be excited? How can you get excited about it when it's already started? And, you know, what can you really know about these guys until, you know, midway through the season to see just how good they are? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's some positives to it all. And I think that there are some things that it would be great. And again, I don't know how many practices or scrimmages are going to be open, but it'd still be great just to be able to come on this show and say, hey, here's what we saw.
But you're not a fan or you're not in support of opening every practice
to
the public.
No, I'm not asking for that.
No, nor do I think it should be.
No.
Not because I think someone's going to sneak in there. Not because I believe Ole Miss or Texas A&M sending some kind of spy up here.
Guy dressed in a Razorback hat.
You know, I don't believe that's what's going on. I just think, how distracting is it for a young team that's still trying to learn what a coach expects, what a playbook demands? How big a distraction is it for the media to be in attendance for these players? I don't know. That's a question. I have questions. I don't have answers on that. And then the other thing is we normally get to watch a lot of these scrimmages in the stadium, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's been turf the last seven. When Petrino put that turf in?
08.
So it's been 10, 11 years.
Yeah.
They're going through this whole process right now of putting down natural grass, turning this field back from field turf to a natural grass surface. How available is that going to be for Saturday scrimmages in August? I would think probably pretty
limited.
Probably
not.
They're going to have approximately, this is from Whole Hog Sports, for 10 to 14 days to practice on it. So, that's it.
So that probably puts the first two Saturdays out for sure.
Yeah.
10th and 17th, maybe the 17th.
Yeah. And, I mean, and I don't know if you've ever watched it from there, but it's not exactly like the indoor practice facility has the greatest view for people to watch the watch the scrimmages and break it down. I mean, just depending on what you like, your viewpoint.
Depending on weather, it could be in the indoor, but you've got the outdoor fields too. So
yeah, which, you know, as you mentioned, can be a little warm during these points.
Well, I mean, everything's warm. It's August. So that's why it's fall camp.
Yeah. Yeah. And not that I'm ever going
to.
Listen, I'm never going to complain if they open up a scrimmage or anything.
I think it's good to let the media, not that the media, you know, is some kind of elitist group and should get in ahead of the public. I worry about the distraction of, and honestly, they generally don't let the public in when they're going to practice on the practice fields. So they're not going to let the public in a lot because, as Ty just said, the availability of the stadium is going to be limited. The only time you can let the public in is when you got the stadium available.
Yeah.
But, you know, how much marketing does this team need? How much conversations need to be had that create marketing opportunities? I think there can be some buzz created throughout the month of August to get people excited. That's what I think could come from practices being open to those that report on this team, to those that form opinions on this team. This team needs some excitement around it. Hopefully something exciting will happen, whether it's Rakeem Boyd breaking off big runs, whether it's McTelvin and Geem looking great, whether it's, you know, hopefully Ben Hicks and Starkle wowing people in practice, whether it's Trey Knox making tremendous plays. This team needs something in print and in word and on TV that gets fans excited. Because that's my, I don't know, concern or that's my observation. Concern's not the right word. That's my observation, is that the anticipation for the 2019 season isn't where it needs to be right now and not where it's been in previous seasons, even with low expectations.
Mm-hmm. This is the lowest it's ever been.
This is a business. At the end of the day, they don't like to call it that in collegiate athletics. They don't like to use the word business, but it's a business. They need to sell seats. They need to put butts in seats. They need people buying tickets. You need to create some buzz. You need to create some awareness. You need to create some excitement. Well, if you're in the news, and hopefully there's a gamble. Hopefully the headlines are positive. Hopefully the conversations are positive. Hopefully what people are seeing build excitement. But right now the storylines are not building a lot of anticipation. And I think that's one thing that this program has to figure out a way to do is, you know, from a marketing and business standpoint, you need to build some anticipation for this season.
Yeah.
And that may not be Chad Morris's concern. He's worried about winning games, but that's a reality too. They need to sell some tickets and they need to get people excited about the season, because I don't think there's a lot of excitement pending with 39 days to go.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's like, I know Chad Morris is listening to this show right now.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, he's up here early.
His iPhone just to get
that's
up.
That's right. And he's getting up and he's listening to us right now. And listen, hey, Chad, let me tell you something. Don't worry about the media. Don't worry about the fans. Just let me in. Just let me be able to check out the practices. I'll be your hype man, all right? I'll go in there and I'll give the people what they want. So just allow me.
Once play on the JV team at Fayetteville High. So
I didn't even do that. So let's not give me too much credit here.
I thought you did.
Nope. But torn Achilles kept me out of that. Remember that whole thing that happened.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by Bud Light Lemon Tea, a unique twist on America's favorite light lager.
Now he does a tightrope back. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
This actually was very helpful from a few people that I got into a Twitter discussion with last night. And it was about Arkansas and the program itself and how in the best years, at least in recent memory, we're always, and by and large, due in part to having a few great in-state recruits or in-state guys on the team, or having a once-in-a-generation type of athlete from the state of Arkansas on the team. And when I really started breaking it down, I'm like, all right, so let's go through what was considered the quote-unquote great years or great eras of Arkansas football of recent history. You had the Bobby Petrino era, the most recent one, 2010-2011. What did you have on those teams? You had Joe Adams. You had Jarius Wright. You had Greg Childs. You had Chris Gragg. Four of those guys. You can throw DJ Williams in there as well. Five of those guys just on the offense coming off the top of my head were fantastic in-state talent guys. Defense,
you,
I mean.
You combine 10 and 11?
Yeah, 10 and just that era.
And you mentioned both quarterbacks, right?
Well, Mallett wasn't from Texas. He was from Texarkana, Texas, okay, technically. But no, but Tyler, yeah. Tyler's another great one, yeah. You had a quarterback like that. Even on defense, you know, you had a guy like Jake Beckett, who was from Arkansas, who was a fantastic defensive lineman. And even if you go behind beyond that, you had Darren McFadden. I think we can all agree that Darren McFadden was a once-in-a-generation type of talent. Arguably, in my case, I don't think it's arguably, but some may say, the greatest Razorback football player of all time to come through there.
Certainly the greatest Razorback football player in the SEC era.
Okay. Which I'll take, because then again, that's what I was wasn't alive. I went around.
I mean, if you want to, there could be some arguments with Lance Allworth. There's a few others, but yes, he is on a very short list. We'd all agree.
Yes. No, I completely agree with you there. So you had him, but then you also had some guys too, like by the name of Peyton Hillis, that was also on that team from the state of Arkansas, that was able to really add to it. Marcus Monk. I know some people still have some ill will towards Marcus Monk, but he was a great football player for Arkansas. So you had those in-state guys, and you could keep going down the list and keep going back and back and back. But my point is when this whole question was brought up, as far as having great in-state talent guys, is that really the only way that Arkansas can have a big, successful year? And something that we talked about, Tommy, was it depends on what you call successful. We're talking about the seasons where you win 9-plus games, where you go 9-4, 10-3, 11-2, like those seasons that will be memorable for a long time. Do you have to have it that way? Because if you're just looking at the next few years in Razorback football and the next few years in Arkansas State recruiting, and you're trying to look at all the pieces of guys that could end up at your school, guys that you're really going to go hot and heavy after, there's not really those caliber players, at least on paper from what the recruiting sites are saying, that are a year-changing, an era-changing, a program-changing type of talent in the next few years. So given that, and given the history of when the best seasons always came with those great in-state players, does that mean that Chad Morse is always going to be, or not going to be, but could he be limited of his success because there's not going to be those fantastic large amounts of in-state talent guys or the once-in-a-generation type players?
Yeah. I mean, that's certainly, you look at the better years. I mean, you can sit here, I've got the media guide open to the Hogs in the NFL draft, and it's year by year, Hogs drafted. Guess what? The more successful years had the more players that followed in the draft either that year or the year following. It's not hard to figure out. And you look through some of these guys, and you look at a Jonathan Lewis and some of these other guys that you kind of forget about because they weren't in maybe some of the more high-profile positions, or a Travis Swanson that was just as key to the success of what happened up there in some of the better times. Absolutely, when you look at, to me, a common denominator for some of the better teams, whether it was 95 and you had Madre Hill and Barry Lunny, in-state talent, a bunch of linemen. The 98 team had a bunch of offensive linemen from this state, Boster and Sandlin, some guys like that from Van Buren and Burlsworth from Harrison. You look across the teams that have competed for divisions, won divisions, went to Atlanta. You mentioned McFadden and those teams, and we know how good those talented, how talented those teams were, chock full of in-state kids. Mm-hmm. 10 and 11, you've already won. That, to me, is always the common denominator with the better teams. Now, is it because when it all lines up every 7 or 8 years, it seems like, and kind of go back and look at the cycles, that's when it seems to happen. And that's when Arkansas has that rise for a year or two. Is it because of the in-state kids, or because when you get that better collection, those kids that come from in this state just play harder? They care more because that Razorback on the side of that helmet means a little more. I think there's something to both of those arguments. But I think it's very difficult for Arkansas to succeed, certainly in this current SEC West environment.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to depend on just completely out-of-state 4- and 5-star talent, you better have some in-state 4-stars. You're not going to have a lot of 5-stars anyway. But you better have enough 4-star in-state talent to make it happen. Because one thing that we haven't seen before is just the domination of what this league is like, for the most part, going back over history, mm-hmm. over the last 25 years.
Yeah. And if you want to see it broke down like this, we'll just go since 2016, all right? Because that's kind of basically, since we're going into 2019 season, right, the last good recruiting class that you could look at and kind of say, all right, where are these guys at now with the program? Arkansas in 2016 had 4 commits from the state of Arkansas. Mm-hmm. Sosa Aguin, which was a big one, 5-star by most accounts, Austin Capps, TJ Hammonds, and Jordan Jones. Now, Sosa Aguin was kind of the one with the expectations, and this year is his final year, and we'll see if he can really...
You're saying those are 4-star or better, right? Is that what you said?
No, those are just total in-state kids.
Okay.
You had 4 of them. So, of those players, you've all seen, you've seen Capps have to switch positions a little bit. It looks like he found his spot on the offensive line. TJ Hammonds was always a weird thing because you're under Brett Bielema for whatever reason. He never wanted to give him the ball, and we know that he's been moving around positions. And Jordan Jones has had some times, but you didn't really have, other than the expectation that was thrown on Sosa Aguin, none of those players were just like program-changing, big-time-changing type of class. Let's move on to the next season, 2017. He had Monteric Brown, Coylin Jackson, Jared Barnes, Kirby Adcock, and David Porter.
So five
that year. But when you look at those players, I know Monteric Brown may get some run this year, so it's yet to be determined how he's going to turn out. But those other guys...
So who have been the impact players out of this group?
Yeah.
So far?
None.
McTelvin Aguin out of the 2 that you've listed.
Yeah. And I know, again, some of these players, you still got their career in front of them, so you never know when they could bounce out this year. But moving on to 2018, you had Connor Noland, who's not even on the team anymore. He's playing baseball. Billy Farrell, Ladarius Bishop, Noah Gatlin, and Isaiah Nichols. That's of the 2018 class. None of those guys, at least at this point in time, have been impact players. And then finally, in this past recruiting class, this is where you're kind of going to be the wait and see, obviously, because none of these guys have played yet. Mm-hmm. But you got Traylon Burks,
yep,
highly recruited, highly regarded. Hudson Henry, same way, big-time tight end. Zach Williams, Malik Chavis, and Marcus Miller.
Mm-hmm.
He actually had more Texas kids last year than Arkansas kids. So, just going through all the kids that came out of the state, not to say that some of these guys won't be good for Arkansas or can't improve and have some sort of impact, especially on this upcoming season, especially these guys I just listed because they haven't even played yet. But just as of right now, at this point in time, I don't see Joe Adams. I don't see Jarius Wright. I don't see Peyton Hillis. And that's what I'm saying, but like in a 4-year span, you haven't had those impact players from the state of Arkansas. And it seemed like, and I know that, eras always come and go and change, but it seemed like there for a long period of time, especially in the Houston Nutt years, heading right into the Bobby Petrino years, every 3 or 4 years, you'd get a good group of in-state kids or at least a one-time, big-time impact player from the state of Arkansas. And you haven't had it the past few seasons.
Particularly an offensive skill type player.
Yeah.
Wide receiver, running back, quarterback.
Yeah.
And I guess Arkansas's really cleaned up at tight end.
They're really good with that.
If you want to know where Arkansas's gotten the most impactful players for this program, it's been the Henrys out of Central Arkansas, Pulaski Academy, and the tight end position. You want to look at one position where this state, over the last, say, 10 years, going back to what, DJ Williams? But yeah. I mean, you look at this state and in-state talent and the position and by position, there's been as much talent at tight end, quality talent at tight end, probably more so than any other position. They've been stacked with in-state kids at times with good tight ends. Problem is, you can't carry a team with a tight end very often.
Mm-mm. they can be great for you, but that's not going to be the key player that's going to change your offense completely.
But if you look at a place where, boy, you've done well recruiting, and you've done well getting kids, I mean, obviously, you know, you look at some of the players that have went on to play in the NFL.
Yeah.
And, you know, the tight end position has been very, very, very fruitful for Arkansas there.
Yeah. And it's also helpful, too, when, you know, you got the Henrys that are producing some great tight ends as a family. You know, Hunter Henry being great. And
Hunter Henry. But you, how many of these tight ends that have come out of Arkansas have at least gotten a shot in the NFL? And Hunter Henry's probably been the best amongst all of them, even though he had the injury.
Yeah, DJ Williams, Chris Gregg. You know, he made that transition to tight end as a wide receiver. Yeah. And yeah, I bet you anything Hudson Henry's going to be giving those looks.
Go back. I mean, I know Jason Peters was a moved inside, but
yeah,
came out as what?
A tight end.
A tight end.
Just showed how athletic he was.
Jodine Davenport. You can go back way back.
Jodine Davenport.
Jodine.
I mean, you can keep going back.
But we're talking about, you know, in a lot of cases, in-state kids from Arkansas. It's amazing how many good tight ends have come out of this state.
Yeah. Because of all the ones we listed, they're all from Arkansas.
Right.
And in most part, they're from Central Arkansas, in most cases.
Just wish you could win 7 or 8 games a year with a tight end.
Why can't y'all do that at quarterback or something like that?
I mean, tight end was so integral. There was years there in the Bielema, those were your best football players. They were figuring out ways to put them in slots.
Yeah.
Split them out.
Yeah.
Put 2 or 3 of those tight ends on the field. Not because they wanted to have a 2 or 3 tight end offense. Those were your better football players.
Yep.
We got to get these guys on the field.
Exactly.
An A.J. Derby. A Hunter Henry. You know, we got to get these guys out there because...
Jeremy Sprinkle. Yeah.
Thank you. You know, because these are the best football players.
Yep. Yep. It's kind of like in the 07 years when you had the Wildcat formation. Was that made because, it was so interesting and intriguing? Or is it because the 3 best players on the team were the running backs, so you got to find all 3 of them to get on the field?
Right.
Yeah. It's as simple as that.
No.
It's as simple as that. Interesting.
I mean, it's interesting how Arkansas as a state has, and I know it's kind of like quarterbacks, there's generally just 1, maybe 2, but Arkansas has produced a lot of, probably more than any other position.
Yeah.
Name me a position Arkansas as a state has produced more talent at.
You're not going to get any argument from me.
In the last 15 years.
Yeah. I can't think of one.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by Bud Light Lemon Tea, a unique twist on America's favorite light lager.
Give is to Alex Collins, straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house.
I've been having some fascinating conversation here early this morning and about the need for the Arkansas Razorback football team to have great in-state talent come through the university. And a point that was actually brought up by Michael in Stuttgart in the previous segment I wanted to dive right back into was when he was bringing up how Chad Morris, he's a big Chad Morris fan, first off. He thinks Chad Morris is going to do a great job at Arkansas, and time will tell in that fact. But he was bringing up the fact that Chad Morris is, quote, the dawn of Texas high school football, and how if you're going to be successful at Arkansas, yeah, you can say all day long you need those great players and those great plethora of players to come through the university, but you also need to make sure that you're getting a lot of those players out of Texas, because Texas high school football is just better.
And I know they had 2 commitments over the weekend, but before that it was like 8 of the 11 commitments were from the state of Texas. So
yeah, and I think that's what Chad Morris from the very beginning has said and has made very known, that they want to get into Texas, they want to recruit to Texas. And if you need any comparison to that, folks, you know, something I know we keep bringing it up and people get tired of it, but that was one of the big downfalls of Red Bielema, is that he did not recruit the state of Texas.
No, but where their staff's at right now with the 2020 class, and they're already looking at 2021s as well, as we've pointed out, there's, what, 2 4-stars in this? The rest are all 3-stars.
Yes.
You're depending on this staff to develop and coach them up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, everybody else is coaching up their kids, too. I mean, that has to go on. But these players are going to have to outperform their star ratings. And we know that, you know, when a kid is offered by Alabama, sometimes their ratings with certain services will rise based on that offer. So that helps, you know, when you're in on kids that are offered by certain schools. But Arkansas is not building this next class, this 2020 class, with a ton of 4-stars right now. it's with a lot of three-star kids. So you're hoping there's some diamonds in the rough, as they say.
Yeah. You only have 13 commitments right now for the 2020 right. class. And as you mentioned, 8 of them are from the state of Texas.
And I didn't commit to memory. The 2 over the weekend, were they from Texas?
They were from Tennessee.
Okay.
They were from Knoxville over in that area. So
8 of the 13 are from Texas. Yeah.
So you have just as many commits in the state of Arkansas as you do in the state of Tennessee. And the thing is that's not a slight against Chad Morrison, the job they're doing in the state of Arkansas. But as we've talked with Richard Davenport, and I know we've talked with others about it, this year in the state of Arkansas, it's just not a ton of talent, or at least SEC caliber talent, that Arkansas is going to be going after. I know Jacoby Criswell is going to North Carolina, and you know that's something that people have been talking about. But hey, Arkansas's got Chandler Morris coming in from the state of Texas, so you feel like you got a better situation there. But a guy like Robert Scott, for instance, a guy out of Conway, committed to Ole Miss. He's an offensive lineman.
That's a killer.
Yeah.
Those are the ones you got to get.
Yeah, those are the ones that really make you scratch your head. And then after that, Cantrell Wallace, he's an outside linebacker from Bryant. He has Arkansas in the mix, and people feel like, experts feel like, crystal ball projections say he's going to be a Razorback when it's all said and done. Then you had Deshaud Stewart, who's a player out of Jonesboro, who's also an outside linebacker. So as far as those upper echelon players in the state of guys that could actually compete in the Division One, or at least according to the experts, you have a few of them going there, but those players aren't going to just come in and change your program. They're not those caliber players, right? And at least coming out of high school, they're not going to be.
Right.
And so it's a matter of, yeah, going into the state of Texas, to me, it is the best thing that's going for Chad Morris in his recruiting, is the fact that he does have that relationship with the state of Texas, with the high school coaches there, with the fact that he's been able to get all these players. And again, I think it was Matt Moscona that joined us at SEC Media Days from ESPN 104.5 in Baton Rouge when he talked about Chad Morris. He says, I don't know if Chad Morris is the right coach for Arkansas as far as if he's going to be able to bring success, but he is the right kind of coach
meaning
for Arkansas.
Meaning
style, meaning recruiting philosophy, meaning the things he's trying to accomplish is what's going to make Arkansas successful. By having a style that is very similar to a lot of the high schools that are going to be in the states that he's recruiting, and having an ability not only to recruit at a high level in the state of Arkansas, but go into the state of Texas to get some of those big-time recruits.
You know, over time, and some that have watched it longer than me may be able to weigh in a little better than this, but it seems like to me, I may be wrong about this, but I think I'm right. As Arkansas had changes in offensive philosophies, I'm talking 40 years ago, 30 years ago, as coaches came in, offensive changed. You know, and in the 80s, a lot of people ran the same stuff. But it seemed like the high school football in this state evolved around whatever Arkansas was doing a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when Brett Bielema came in, state didn't change. High school football did not change in Arkansas to fit what the Razorbacks were doing. 95%+ of the schools in this state, it seems like, run some version of a spread. Could be a up-tempo passing spread, could be a smash-mouth spread. There's all types of spread, but spread offense is what is run in the vast majority of high school football in our state. Very few line up in pro-style I formation, you know, 3 yards, cloud of dust type offense. And I always wondered how it was going to work when Brett Bielema arrived, when the high schools in this state was square peg, round hole, as far as recruits you were going to get, linemen you were getting, skill position players, quarterbacks, all of this stuff that just weren't accustomed for junior high and high school football running your type of, they weren't running your type of system. How the high school coaches were really going to get on board with sending their kids to play for you. So, I mean, obviously in the end that was a failed experiment, but now you've got something that's far more compatible and I believe going to have more success over the long haul.
Yeah, because there is nothing better for high school kids, especially elite caliber high school kids, to where they have to make that big jump and big transition into college football, big boy SEC college football, than to when they step on campus, they're not having to completely relearn how to play the sport because of the style being so different.
Well, it's the training, it's the body types, particularly with your linemen. Bielema wanted a different type of – he wanted a big, bulky, 300-pound-plus lineman. That's not what Chad Morris wants. They need someone quicker afoot, quicker with hands, more fleet of foot, that run the screens, do the things where they're more mobile as linemen than what Bielema needed.
Mm-hmm.
Bielema was hand down, press forward, we're going, you know, power football.
Yeah.
You know, that's just not you know, it's a whole different body type. That's one thing from last year that, you know, the line has struggled due to a lack of depth and really just overall talent compared to the other teams in the SEC. But they've also had to transform body types up there and mm-hmm. techniques.
Yeah.
So,
well, and then adding into the whole deal with Brett Bielema, because you remember the transition or in the struggle that they had once Brett Bielema arrived on campus offensively, is that that was completely different from what Petrino was running and the type of players that he recruited.
Right.
And if you remember the offense that first year, and even a little bit that second year where they felt like the defense was really good, but the offense struggled, Brandon Allen didn't come in there to just hand the ball. He wasn't the type of quarterback that would hand the ball off to a big, bulky running back behind a big, bulky offensive line. And then they had to get in a bunch of true freshmen in there, and they didn't have the wide receiving core and the talent at wide receiver that they had originally planned on. And so everybody was just kind of the same situation, square peg, round hole, trying to make it all work. And then once you got into that transition, it seemed like Brett Bielema completely abandoned that power smash mouth football and tried to go under Dan Enos when he got brought on, under whatever the crap that was that they were trying to do.
It's amazing what you'll do when you're trying to save your job.
Exactly, exactly. It's amazing when you say, we're going to Alabama-Bama or LSU-LSU, and then once you can't, you're like, well, crap, we got to change this.
Well, when you realize you got Cole Kelly, and he's really not a seven-step drop quarterback, you know, that's really not his game. You need to stand him up and not make him move, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, unfortunately, it's the growing pains that come along with having some sort of overhaul and a transition of offensive philosophies. But this, again, I don't know if Chad Morris is going to come into Arkansas and compete for an SEC West or a conference title or anything. I don't know. I hope he does, but I don't know. But what I do know is that what he is trying to do, at least, how he's trying to build it, the way he's recruiting and trying to recruit, it seems like it's a good fit. It seems like it fits and checks all the boxes off for what a coach needs to do at Arkansas to be successful. I don't know if it's going to work because it's about execution more than anything. I mean, hey, look, Kevin Sumlin was a great recruiter, but he couldn't do jack crap with it at A&M. Yeah. I mean, Gene Chizik did a good job, but it didn't mean anything. You got to be able to get him on campus and do something with him.
Chizik did win a national title.
Right, but then he went 0-8 just 2 years later. Cam Newton won that national title. I still hold that to the high standard that it is. But the whole point is that it seems like it's a good fit, but he's got to execute the game plan.
The reality is, I heard Ty and Phil talking about this yesterday, just the number of years over the last 7 or 8, Arkansas has finished in the bottom of the Western Division, in the cellar. Had a couple there, 15 and 16, where you didn't, but you had the 5-3 year, then the 3-5 year.
Yep.
Other than that, it's been 0-8, 1-7, 2-6. That's what you got to get away from. Forget about winning the West. Forget about winning the SEC. It's baby steps right now. You've got to go from 0-8 to figure out how to get to 2-6, and then once you can get to 2-6, and then you get back to where Bielema had it 1 year at 5-3, and then you can compete.
Yeah.
Then you're at least competing, maybe not for the division, but you're at least relevant, and you're in the mix for a little better bowl. And then if you can sustain that, and this is going to be a process, how do you go from 5-3 to the very steep climb up to 6-2, 7-1, and you know, the top of the mountain, which seems unattainable right now, 0-8 to 8-0. I mean, just seems unattainable.
Get to a point to where before the season starts, every team you play on the SEC schedule is not circling you and calling it a victory.
Right. I mean, so it's not, I mean, I don't sit here looking at, well, how is Chad Morris going to win the West in 4 years? Or he's a failure. How's Chad Morris going to win 4 SEC games in the next 3 years? I mean, not combined. How's he going to get to a 4-4 SEC record by like his fourth season? That's what I'm wondering.
Mm-hmm.
How does he recruit his way to that? How does he develop players to that by year 4? Not year 2, not year 3. By year 4, can we be at a point as a program where you're winning? Because then you're a 7-8 win program. Then you're set up to make the next step.
You have to have the foundation laid first.
And I'm assuming things aren't going to change much in the West. I don't think Saban's retiring in the next 2 or 3 or 5 years, honestly. I think he's coaching well into his 70s.
He's Tom Brady, man. He'll never leave.
Well, I mean, what else is he going to do? And we were talking about this with Tim Duncan in the last hour. What's he going to do? Go sit around the house, watch TV, go to the lake?
Run out of gas in a boat.
He was talking about this at media days that he's bored to tears right now. He's ready to get started. He's not quitting anytime soon.
Wired differently.
So, I mean, I don't see the West changing a lot. We know what A&M's invested. So how do you get into that top half of the division? Then you go from there. Mm-hmm. Then if you have the next Matt Jones, Darren McFadden type offensive skill player from this state and you get him and you can put the pieces around him, then you have a chance to have that season or two like you did in 10 and 11.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's what it's set up to be, and that's what you're hoping it's going to be set up to
be. This thing is down to the footings, man. You're having to re-pour the footings on this mm-hmm. thing. This is, you bought the old rundown house in the neighborhood, and it has been bulldozed,
yeah.
And we are starting over here.
You took a blowtorch to it and burned it, and now you got to build it back. It sucks.
Sucks, yeah.
But you but know what?
We've poured the footings.
Yep.
And this year, it's about building the foundation.
But you got to have a roof
and
over
maybe
your
we
head.
Get some framing done this year. But that's where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
No one likes the reality of it, but that's the reality of it.
Let's hope it takes less time than what it took to build your fireplace in your backyard, Tommy.
Still working.
Not to bring it up.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by Bud Light Lemon Tea, a unique twist on America's favorite light lager.
Danny West of HawkSports.com. Good morning, Danny. How's it going this morning?
Morning,
man?
John. How are you guys doing? Appreciate you having me.
We are well.
Yeah, we are well.
Thank you for getting up and talking to us early.
Yeah, that's
you got it, buddy.
That's really where the appreciation comes in for you coming on. But, you know, we've had some good discussion this morning. I want to get your take on something. When it comes to Arkansas and in-state talent when it comes to football, we know that some of the greatest and most memorable players in Razorback football history have been from the state. And even in the most recent history, some of Arkansas's best seasons that they've ever had were due in part largely to having in-state talent. Bobby Petrino's great class with the wide receivers out of Warren and all of that. You had Darren McFadden and Peyton Hillis before that. In order for Arkansas football to be successful at a high level, I'm saying 9, 10, 11 games and 11 wins each season, do they have to rely on having great in-state talent come through their football program?
Well, it certainly helps. I mean, you're talking about a state that traditionally is, as you guys know, is not going to put up the same quantity as the neighboring states. So, yeah, that definitely helps. You've got to capitalize on the, when there is an uptick. You know, we call it cycle in Arkansas. And for the last few years, guys, you're talking about an average of about 5 guys per class. That's probably not going to cut it. So, you know, when you do get that rare 2008-2015 type class that has, you know, 8, 9, 10 guys in it, you've obviously got to capitalize on those. But it's the ones that hurt you, John, that the ones that get away that hurt you, I should say. I mean, you look around college football right now, guys. Trey Norwood over at Oklahoma, you know, he's starting at cornerback. You think they could use that guy right now? Yeah. KJ Hill up at Ohio State. I think he could have played a little bit for him last year. I mean, Sean Michael Flanagan's in Stillwater. I think he's going to be good. There's other ones. You actually got lucky with Luke Jones coming full circle here, and he's back on campus now. So those are the ones that can really haunt you. You know, but for the most part, they've kept guys at home. I mean, when you compare Arkansas's numbers to a state like Missouri, let's just take Missouri for an example. Last year, they offered 18 in-state guys, and 11 of them left the state. And they went to places like Ohio State, Clemson, Texas. Can you imagine if that happened here in Arkansas? Fire everybody, right? So, you know, to answer the question, I'm going a long way around it here. You've absolutely got to depend on the in-state crop, and hopefully, you know, you can catch it on an uptick, and there will be that class again of 8 to 12 guys that you can count on.
All right, so get your crystal ball out for us, Danny. I think we have an idea of what 2020 looks like. What is 2021, 22? I think it gets harder to project out that because you're
sure.
Then talking about kids in junior high. But what do the next couple of cycles, as you say, look like for Arkansas and for in-state talent over the next 3 years?
Not great, Tommy, to be honest with you. The next two classes to follow this one, and this one is pretty good. It's probably a little better than we expected in terms of SEC caliber talent. But, man, it's looking pretty thin for the 21 class. We mentioned Trey Norwood there. He's got a cousin, and I'm sure you guys are aware of him down there. But Drayden Norwood is another corner in the 2021 class. He's by far the biggest standout guy. Arkansas has already offered him. Got a few guys in the 22 class that, you know, in Central Arkansas that I think they've got a shot at 4 stars. But outside of that, the depth, You know, when we talk about 8 to 10 guys, I'm just, at this stage, I'm not seeing that yet.
Speaking with Danny West of HogSports.com right now on the Morning Rush. Danny, continuing on with that conversation, something that we talked about too is about Chad Morris. And I feel like, and I agree with some other people that have said this, that Chad Morris, we don't know how successful he's going to be. We don't know if he's going to be the greatest coach for Arkansas or a great coach. But as far as the kind of coach he is, the type of coach he is, it seems like that's exactly what Arkansas needs as far as his offensive philosophy, as far as his recruiting style, and the fact that he is trying to have such a big footprint in the state of Texas as well. Do you see that same thing where Chad Morris seems to be checking all the boxes for what type of coach Arkansas football needs to be successful?
I like how you put it there. It checks a lot of boxes, makes a lot of sense. When you talk about his recipe and what they're doing in the state of Texas, particularly East Texas, where guys are sometimes more likely to get out of there and go to another state. I like what they're doing there. I think he's got the right recipe with what he's doing in Memphis right now. We talk about an upcycle in Memphis. Man, they're killing it. They're really producing a lot of talent. You look over in Tulsa and what they've been able to pull out of Tulsa, Oklahoma City area. LSU can't sign them all. You talk about a Devin Bush, a Greg Brooks, a couple of four-star guys there. And last year's class, you're going to count on those guys as true freshmen this year. And you've also got a 2020 commitment from down there. And Jamie Vance, another cornerback that personally I think he's borderline four-star material. So you could take some of LSU's leftovers, if you want to call it that. But you hit it, John. You know, if I was suddenly the head coach of Arkansas tomorrow, he's doing exactly what I think I would do and trying to target the same areas and cross your fingers a little bit that the home state here produces a little better talent.
So we know they're going to sign approximately 25 each year. Put a number on Texas. How many players have to come out of Texas? We know they signed 8 so far out of their 13 commitments, or not signed, but have 8 commitments out of 13. What's the number got to look like, in your opinion, every year out of the Lone Star State?
Well, I think they're inching closer towards the target number of around, 8 to 10 per class. If you can get 12, and they're the right 12, how can you argue with half of your class coming out of the state of Texas? You know, I think about Chad has been here for, 18, 19 months now, and he's already produced more Texas commitments than Bielema had in 5 classes. That sticks out to me. And again, I go back to East Texas, a guy like Jeff Traylor and what he's been able to do there. Those guys can play now. I mean, TQ Jackson, Savion Williams, the best commitment they've gotten so far in terms of rankings is right there at Carthage, Texas, East Texas. Tykeus Crawford, a 4-star offensive lineman. So swing for the fences in Texas. Every now and then you're going to knock it out of the park with a Tykeus Crawford, a Jalen Catalan, Torian Carter, some of those type of guys. You're not going to beat them all. You're not going to beat Texas and A&M for all these guys. Some of them are going to leave and go to Oklahoma. But for the most part, the ones that leave the state, I think they're trying to target those guys. You don't need them going to Stillwater. You don't need to get beat by Nebraska or Missouri or Ole Miss for these types. Those are the ones you've got to have.
Danny, let me ask you about a possible commitment today. Martavius French out of Memphis is going to be making his announcement, a 4-star linebacker, 6'2", 240 pounds. What's your crystal ball saying about him? Is he going to end up being a Razorback? And what type of player can he be if he decides to choose the Hogs?
The crystal ball is looking really good, John. I think we made that pick a while back and still feeling pretty confident about that. He would be a big one now. I mean, you're talking about a linebacker situation that's really thin on depth. Of course, he's not going to be able to come in and help you this year. But when you talk about the future health of that position, this could go a long way in addressing some of those needs. 4-star guy, 6'2", 235, really, really physical guy. I mean, I would encourage everybody to watch his film. If you like big hits, he's the guy to watch. So he's got offers from everybody. He's been up here several times. And then if you can lock that one up, today around noon is when he's going to announce his decision. Then you've got all your eggs, at the same school there with Bryson Eason. His teammate is another 4-star linebacker. So I think it could go a long way in helping you out with Bryson. And if you can come away with a couple of 4-star guys in Memphis, goes back to the conversation we just had, that's right up your alley now. Now you're cooking a little bit in Memphis. So Yeah, that would be a big one, John. I think they've offered 9 guys over there in the city of Memphis this year. So to get that first one on board would be really, really big for them.
Danny West with HogSports.com with us here on the Morning Rush. Let's talk a little basketball recruiting and Eric Musselman, because while it is a busy football time, it's also very active on the basketball recruiting trail. Tell me what's going on with the NCAA and a lot of the summer activities. I know there's a big event this weekend in Houston. The NCAA has gotten involved in some of these camps and hosting events. What can you tell us about what's going to happen in Houston this weekend that's being put on and conducted by the NCAA?
Yeah, it's another one of those big NCAA-sanctioned events where coaches can go out on the road and see some of their top guys. And guys, they've been all over the place. I mean, the NCAA schedule in the summertime now has gotten so difficult to keep up with that I don't even do a great job of remembering all of the dates. You know, but I know the weekends are open evaluation periods. They've been everywhere. I mean, everywhere. So that part of it has been refreshing. You know, sure, it's been more work for us, but they're going to go back out again this weekend, see a lot of big-time guys. And, you know, I don't know what the feeling is down there, but up here, man, it seems like everybody I talk to is really excited about, you know, the direction. And it comes down to effort. You know, we went through it with covering Brett Bielema and Mike Anderson at the same time, and now you suddenly switch gears into, you know, highly energetic coaches that are just always recruiting. It's more work for me, but man, fans seem to be really excited about it. So we'll see what comes out of this weekend.
Do you ever remember a time, and maybe this is just prisoner of the moment, but two head coaches in basketball and football that were more recruiting number one priority than what we got right now with the two major sports?
Well, I can't remember it. I mean, shoot, it's kind of what I always prayed for, to be honest with you, Tommy, as somebody who gets to do it for a living. But at the same time, it's a double-edged sword. I can't catch my breath at this point. So
they're working you to
death. It has been. I'm telling you, it's a little bit busy right now. But no, to answer your question, I mean, I can't think of a time, which I only go back so far, guys, but I couldn't name a time, you know, in my lifetime that I've seen it like this.
All right, real quick before we let you get out of here, Danny, tonight on ESPN 95.3, ESPN 104.3 in Central and North Central Arkansas, and as well as HitThatLine.com, it's going to be the premiere of the Hog Hustle Show with you, Trey Biddy, and RJ Hawk at 7 o'clock tonight. Really excited about it. Can just so for all the people that are interested in it, can you tell them what the show's about, what they're expecting to hear, and just all the things that are going to be going on the Hog Hustle in tonight's premiere?
It's pretty much about the Hogs. If you like Razorback football, basketball, recruiting, you know, it's a couple of idiots sitting around the table talking about it. So
wait, that's
I think
this show.
People will enjoy it. Yeah.
Wait, we've already got the patent on that. Hang on.
It's a lot like this show. It's a lot like this one. No, hey, we're going to have a good time with it. We'll have coaches on, recruits, national recruiting analysts, and, you know, we'll bring on some fun guys, Bubba Carpenter, Coach Nutt. You know, Joe Nichols has sat in a few times. So we try to mix it up a little bit, but for the most part, it's just like hanging out at deer camp, man. We just have a good time and talk, try to pretend that we're smarter than we are.
That's my type of radio show right there, man. Key to my own heart. Danny West of HogSports.com and also co-host of the Hog Hustle Show, which you'll be able to hear tonight. Again, ESPN 95.3 in the River Valley, ESPN 104.3 in North Central Arkansas. HitThatLine.com tonight at 7 o'clock. Appreciate it, Danny. Have a great one, man. We'll catch up with you later down the road, all right?
All right, guys. Thank y'all.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at HitThatLine.com.